Do you need help protecting your finances as you enter retirement? David Dickens of KC Financial Advisors has got you covered. Welcome to the Cover Your Assets KC podcast.
Another edition of the Cover Your Assets KC podcast coming at you right now. Walter Storholt alongside David Dickens, the president and wealth advisor at KC Financial Advisors, serving you throughout Kansas City with an office in Overland Park. And we're always online at coveryourassetskc.com. That's coveryourassetskc.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. You can do so on pretty much any device or any platform that you like to use for your podcasts. Maybe you just go to coveryourassetskc.com every week, or you look for the email from Elizabeth each week alerting you to the new podcast that's been published. But if you do use iTunes, you can certainly subscribe to the podcast there and get alerts on your phone when new episodes are posted. We're also on Google Podcasts, Spotify. Oh gosh, what are the rest of them? David, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and then about, 75 others. So if you use a podcast tool, by the way, an app, and for some reason we're not on there and you'd like us to be, let us know and we'll get submitted and we'll get on that particular app that you like to use. Just let us know through the website, coveryourassetskc.com. You'll see plenty of opportunities to interact and let us know there. Well, David, we've got a fun podcast on the docket for today because you're speaking about my generation. And, or I guess you're talking about my generation would be the better way to tee that up. But no, this is exciting, and we're going to let you drive the bus a little bit today, as folks probably saw the headline of The Foolproof Way to Retire Well Off. And you're aiming this towards me. Why?
Well, so first of all, I've got three terrific daughters that are about your age, and one of them, just totally offhand, about her third or fourth year through a really fantastic university down in Texas, she goes, "Dad, we have this one particularly silly mandatory class we have to go to as freshmen, and there's not a personal financial planning course anywhere to be seen. Why wouldn't they make every college freshman do that?" So it just tugs on my heart to mention, I think, a five-step plan that what I've dubbed is a foolproof way to retire well off. It's not a foolproof way to retire rich, but it is absolutely a foolproof way to retire well off. And so if you're in your 20s or 30s, or if you're listening to this podcast because you're a regular listener and you know people in their 20s or 30s, once you listen to this, if you think there's some pieces of wisdom in here, please forward it on to people that you care about. Because I think this is really, really important for our loved ones in their 20s and 30s. Heaven only knows what Social Security is going to look like when they get to be 60 or 70. So I think these are going to be really, really important steps, and I hope you find them interesting too.
And from our perspective, I think, as one in that age group of your daughters, I think that this is just important as well, because there's so much information out there these days. It's sometimes hard to know who to listen to when you've got conflicting information about what you should do. And you're being, at this age, offered credit cards and tempted to go way into debt, at this point in time, and spend. And you just got a lot of different messages that are being thrust our direction. So listening to one that talks about retiring well off should be one that perks up a lot of ears for us youngins, I suppose. So I'm excited about this, David. Let's get it rolling. What's the first way that we can retire, the foolproof way that we can retire well off?
Well, the first thing you need to do is to save 10% of what you make. So I did this presentation for a company full of millennials here in, it's actually in Olathe. And so the question came up during that presentation, so is it 10% of my net or 10% of my gross? I said, look, it doesn't matter where you start. Start at 10% of your net after, you send your money to the IRS and maybe you give to your church. Save 10% of the remaining and then spend everything else. That's okay. As you get your next raise, eventually get to 10% of your gross earnings. And as you get into your 40s or 50s, you can increase it from there. But just make sure that when you get started working, you're putting away some money of your own for yourself. Another question that comes up, Walter, is, well, so I get a company match. So if I do 7% and they do 3%, is that what you're talking about? I would encourage you, if that's where you can start, then start there. Make sure you get the company match. But your goal is to save 10% of your money. And if the company matches, fantastic. That's a cool bonus on top of the 10% of your own money that you're saving for yourself.
Nobody ever complained about saving too much for retirement, right?
I have never met that person. I've met a number of people who save too little. And that's a sad thing. And especially in your 20s or 30s, you have a lot of time on your side. But if you get started saving for retirement in your mid-40s or mid-50s, you're going to have a significant problem retiring, definitely a significant problem retiring well off.
Absolutely. Very wise words there. All right. So that's a relatively easy one to implement, right? I mean, it's just start the habit, pull the trigger, start saving 10%. You know, if you have to cancel Netflix for a few months to help make that habit happen, do it. And it'll be a worthwhile venture. Get to that 10% as soon as you can. And if it has to be net to start, that's great. But eventually work your way up to gross. That's a good goal too. All right. So that's my takeaway from that, David. How about tip number two?
So step number two is only incur good debt. So what's the difference between good debt and bad debt? Well, good debt would be a mortgage that you use to buy a house. A house is almost always an appreciating asset. It appreciates over time. And you're buying a big asset for a relatively small amount of money up front, and you have to borrow money to do it. That's perfectly fine. Preferably, you're getting a fixed rate mortgage. Auto debt is somewhere in between. If you don't overspend on your car, then it's fine to get a nice, low interest rate, 5-year automobile loan. So that's okay. Bad debt is credit card debt, is personal loans, and borrowing from your 401k. So I would encourage you, if you want to retire well off, never, ever run a credit card balance over a month end. That means two things. First of all, it means you're paying a bunch of interest. And once that becomes a habit, you'll pay that interest for a long period of time. But the other thing it means is that you're living above your means. For whatever reason, you're spending more than you're making, and that is an ugly habit. And that's like rust, or think of it like termites. That's something that eats away at your financial foundation, and you can't see it at first. But once you notice it, there's a lot of damage that has happened. So don't live above your means. And if you're running a credit card balance, you are living above your means.
It's such a hard hole for a lot of people to dig out of as well, because it starts as just a little bit, right? Okay, I'll just let a little bit of credit card debt float for, you know, just one extra month, and it's a really small balance. And then the worst thing that happens is you pay it off and you convince yourself, okay, well, that wasn't that bad. That worked out pretty well. And the next time you do it and you go a little bit further in, and then a little bit further and a little bit further, and it can really pile up on you. And I know from personal experience and people that I've spoken with over the years who have gotten into a lot of trouble with credit card debt, one, just how devastating it can be. And then two, the crazy thing, just how much their life changes when they get out of it. And so please, absolutely, follow all the guidance you can on staying out of that bad debt. It's just so detrimental to this mission of retiring well off, of prospering financially throughout your years of working and into retirement as well. So that's such an important message, David. I'd almost have a bone to pick with you and say that should be number one, right? Although you technically didn't say that there were rankings to these. These are just, you need to do all five of them no matter what order, right?
True, but I did give a little bit of thought to where you need to start. You know, obviously you're not going to be saving 10% if you're running up a lot of credit card debt. That would be silly. So you're right. You got to live below your means in order to have the 10% to put away. But once you get started living below your means, well, savings becomes easy because you're not spending every nickel that comes into your checking account. And if you happen to have a 401k at your office, oh my gosh, that's effortless savings. The money never goes into your checking account. It gets put away before you even get a chance to see it or touch it. So if you happen to have a 401k at work, make sure you use it and don't live above your means.
Quick follow-up question to that. and I know the answer, but someone may ask it, I think. And that would be, let's say that, you know, is it 10% of one of the incomes, or is it 10% of the combined incomes? Like, if my wife were putting away 10% of her income, well, then I don't have to worry about putting 10% away of mine. We can just have the retirement account through her work and just leave it at that, and that should be enough.
So that's an awesome question, and here's the answer. Your lifestyle is you, whoever's listening to this asking that question, your lifestyle is very likely built on both of those incomes. And if you want to live well off based on the lifestyle you have become accustomed to over the years, you need to save 10% of your household earnings, not 10% of one of your earnings. The whole goal here is to be able to retire in a similar lifestyle to what you have become accustomed to, which is why you've got to save 10% of your household income, not one of your incomes.
A good clarification. Let's move on to point number three. What's next?
So this gets neglected by a lot of folks because they feel like it's lazy money or dead money, but you have to have an emergency fund. And usually that's money sitting around in a bank earning next to nothing, but it is really, really important when you have some sort of emergency. You know, that might be a new transmission for your car or a new set of tires or a new furnace for your house. But that emergency fund needs to be 6 months of living expenses. Now, you don't necessarily build that all at once, but you need to build it over time. And what that's going to do is, especially when we were discussing credit card debt, I thought, well, credit card debt becomes disastrous if you happen to lose your job or if somebody in your household happens to lose his or her job and your income is way cut. Well, that's where having an emergency fund can really come in handy, almost financially life-saving, so that you can bridge those unexpected gaps or bumps in the road. You've got to have an emergency fund. It needs to be liquid, so your 401k doesn't count. And it really should be, your goal should be 6 months of living expenses. So that's number three, have an emergency fund.
That's an easy one, and one that we all certainly need to get on board with. Having that emergency fund will come in handy one of these days. It certainly has for me in the past, David. What about number four? What's a good principle to add to this list?
So the fourth one is just to make sure that you cover your catastrophic risks. And those are death and disability. So let's cover death first. I have always been...
And David, this is different from the emergency fund, right?
This is totally different from the emergency fund. So for instance, the example from my own client base, I have a couple of clients, they're just late 30s, early 40s. But one of them, he works, she stays at home, and they have a fairly large family. They have a nice insurance policy on him through his work. They had no life insurance on her. Well, if he dies, she's going to have a big policy. Everybody's going to be sad, but at least she'll have a big chunk of money coming to her tax-free. If she dies, he's still going to have his job, but he's going to have a lot of kids at home, and that's going to be a very expensive problem to handle. He needs life insurance on her life, and that's just something that they had not considered. Over my life, speaking personally, I have always been a buy-term life and invest the difference kind of guy. Now, I know people that buy permanent life insurance and they're really happy with that setup. And you can talk with your advisor, whoever you consider to be an advisor in your life. I would encourage you to buy the cheapest form of life insurance possible, which is term life insurance, and get a bunch of it. Because first of all, it's dirt cheap. Second of all, if you were to happen to meet an untimely death, the more, the better for those you leave behind. So you've got to have an insurable interest if you're single and you don't have any heirs that you're particularly concerned about. Well, that's a totally different thing. But if you're married, if you've got a mortgage, if you've got kids, term insurance is really, really important. So should I get that through my company plan or should I get it individually? Almost always, if you apply for term life insurance outside of your company plan and you're in good health, you will get it cheaper than if you get it through your company plan. You just need to compare the two. All you really want is the biggest death benefit for the cheapest monthly you can get from a reputable company. Secondly, disability insurance. Probability speaking, you are more likely to become disabled than to die. The difficulty with becoming disabled, even if you're single, is that you're still around and you're going to have some big bills and you don't have an ability to work. So in this case, your company plan is probably your cheapest, best alternative if your company offers one. So what you're doing there is the benefit, if you were to become disabled, likely comes to you tax-free, and it's just an income replacement. So if you want to retire well off, you have to make sure that your catastrophic risks are covered. And in your 20s and 30s and 40s, that's death and disability. Talk to somebody who has your best interest in mind and figure out how much of each of those you need and build that into your plan.
So far, David, all of these sound relatively easy to implement, with the maybe exception of the save 10%, because it's a new habit that needs to be formed. But none of these seem all that strenuous to pull the trigger on and to put in place. And I think that's a good news, because we're talking about a major impact that you are indicating here, talking about retiring well off and the foolproof way to retire well off. And obviously, that's an attractive goal for anybody. So what's number five? Is the other shoe going to drop and you're going to give us something hard to do now?
So I'm just going to mentioned something about what you just said, and you've said it three or four times so far in this podcast. Well, these all are pretty easy. You know what, Walter? Every one of these, nothing I'm saying today is rocket science, but if you write these five on a note card and put them in your wallet and look at them every 6 months, you will retire well off. None of this is difficult, but most of it we don't do. So number five is the simplest of the five, but I think it's really important, and that is annually create a statement of net worth for your household. So if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably pretty good with Excel, or you're pretty good with a yellow pad and a pencil. And all you're doing is creating a balance sheet, a statement of net worth for yourself. On one side, on the left side, you list all of your assets, cars, houses, bank accounts, 401ks, etc., all of your assets, and the dollar amount that each of them is valued at, and you add them up. And on the right side, you list all of your liabilities, your mortgage, your car loan, hopefully not your credit card debt, but whatever you owe to people, you list those as liabilities. Subtract the left side, assets, from the right side, liabilities, and down in the bottom right-hand corner is where you have your net worth. Now, hopefully, when you do that, it's a positive number, because if it isn't, then we got more to talk about. But the reason that this is so important is that it creates a record. I personally can look back for the last 25 years, and I have a net worth statement for every January 1st. Why is that important? I'm a goal setter. I have set financial goals for me and my family for a long time. How do you know if you're, other than you kind of feel good about things, how do you know if you're actually achieving your goals unless you write them down and measure them? The other thing about this is you can look back over your history. Let's just say that you're 30 and you listen to me and you say, you know what, that old boy, he seems like he's got some stuff going on. And 5 years from now, you look back over your last 5 years of net worth statements, and you say, hey, I can see my net worth is growing, and it really took a leap 3 years ago. That is going to create momentum for you. Whether it's weight loss and you know, the more you lose, the more you lose, or whatever it is, you can think back on the things that motivate you, but seeing success, seeing your own success creates more motivation for future success. So I strongly encourage you, this is number five. It's simple, but it's really important. Annually, every January 1st, create a statement of net worth, print it off, or archive it in your Excel file, and occasionally go back and look at it and just make sure that you are making incremental progress every year to achieving a higher net worth. So, Walter, like you said, none of these are rocket science. They are five really important things that everybody can do. Foolproof list of five steps to retire well off. Like I started the podcast, this is not a formula for getting rich. This is a formula for retiring well off. And it's pretty hard to screw this up if you do all five of those and measure your progress.
And again, I want to recap, just in case you need that, here at the end of the podcast. We're talking about those five things being saving 10% of your household income, making sure that you don't take on bad debt, only good debt, that you establish that emergency fund, that you plan for catastrophic events, no matter how much you don't want to think about those bad things happening, and last but not least, annually create that statement of net worth and check in on it. Look back, I would add to it. Make sure that you're doing exactly what you're talking about. Look back over the last 5 years and see how it's growing so that you can create that momentum. Pretty cool recap, I think, of the things that'll help you with a foolproof way to retire well off. And David, I'm excited because your net worth thing, I do it monthly. And so I'm like, I'm really jazzed now. So does that mean I'm 12 times as well off in the end?
You're a dramatic overachiever, Walter.
That just means I like spreadsheets. I think that's all. Well, that's pretty cool. And like David said at the beginning of the podcast, if I think a lot of our listeners to the program each week, you may be closer to your retirement age. That tends to be the group that's more plugged into their financial future and thinking about, you know, what we're going to do with our net worth when we get to that stage in life and how we need to prepare for that, you know, distribution phase of life. But David, this is great information for that next generation. Maybe you've got a son or daughter or some grandkids who need to hear this message as well. And please do forward the podcast to them. Tell them about it. If they've got a podcast app, they know how to find the show most likely. Or take the link from the website, coveryourassetskc.com, and be sure to just share the link of today's episode with them as well. There's lots of different ways you can do it. If you got the notice in the email of this episode, you can just forward that email. They'll be able to click on the link and listen to the show as well. David, thank you for helping give us this roadmap to being well off in retirement, and we much appreciate the research and the effort that went into that, and your guidance is always here on the show.
Yeah, well, it was a fun one. I hope that people take this one to heart and find somebody you can share this information with. It's really important.
Absolutely is. If you want to get in touch with David Dickens and the team at KC Financial Advisors for any reasons, ask your financial questions, whether they be about today's topic or a different one, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for a future show, we invite you to go to coveryourassetskc.com. There's a couple of different ways you can get in touch. If you scroll down to the bottom of the page, you'll be able to see the phone number, which is, by the way, 913-317-1414. That's certainly one way to make that happen. But also, if you click on the podcasts tab, this is really easy to do. Right up at the top of the page, you'll see the word podcast. If you click on that tab, you can scroll down and see the list of episodes. And then also at the bottom of the page, you'll see where it says suggest a podcast topic. And that's where you can put in your suggestion. And we'd love to have a topic on the show that is particularly suggested and requested from one of you listening to the program. So again, that is coveryourassetskc.com, the place to go. We thank David Dickens for joining us on the show today, and we thank you for listening as well. I'm Walter Shorholt, and we'll talk to you next time on the Cover Your Assets KC podcast. Investment advisory services offered through Brookstone Capital Management, LLC, BCM, a registered investment advisor. BCM and KC Financial Advisors are independent of each other.